Stan, I was a little taken aback by your comment about Mayor Barry. You know, we are all going to miss Mayor Barry. Journalism will be the poor without him in Washington. Mayor Barry, I think, had a very simple campaign platform. He promised to take crime out of the streets and put it into his office where he could keep an eye on it. And he did that. It's a daunting task to be asked to comment on how to train insurgents in journalism. Many of you have had your own experiences in that, and probably no one has had more experience on this planet than Stan. 1,000 young people have passed through Stan's doors in the last few years, and a fair number went on into the media.
Clarify.
And only one or two decided to become liberals to avoid Stan's exacting standards and because they didn't like 50s music. My comments, therefore, will deal with the issue of training conservative journalists from two indirect lines of attack. I don't think conservatives can change the media as much as it needs changing until they first look at how to train journalists to be journalists and to change the medium, the media culture. Training journalists to be journalists means overcoming the abysmal ignorance and incompetence that infests the profession and is rampant in the nation's newsrooms. A lot of bias is not bias. It's simply unconscious ignorance. Reporters unable to analyze issues for themselves and simply sniffing the zeitgeist and following wherever it takes them. How ignorant are some of the most successful people in journalism today? An anecdote, admittedly outrageous from my own experience, may perhaps serve to illustrate this. When I was in California, I interned briefly at the leading television news station in Sacramento. This was when I had delusions that perhaps television journalism would be a more appealing place to work than print journalism. The leading anchorman there at station KOVR, Channel 3 in Sacramento, was Mike Boyd. Mike must have been the prototype for Ted Baxter on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Unfortunately, he had never worked in a 5001 radio station. He had started at the top and had managed to teeter precariously there ever since. John Lennon died, I believe, in 1980 when I was interning there. Obviously, it was a great tragedy. And the station was preparing a 15-minute retrospective on his career and the observations about his funeral for the noon news. And we were standing around having finished this retrospective, and Mike Boyd came in about 11:30, half hour before the news. Mike was notorious for spending more time with his hairspray than with the newspaper. And, of course, he was heading right to the dressing room. And Mike, of course, had a reputation for being a very gullible reporter or an anchorman. And so one of us got this mischievous idea that perhaps we should play a joke on him. So we called him over and said, Mike, you know, there's an aspect of this Lennon tragedy that has never been covered. And Mike said, what is that? Well, historians at the University of California at Berkeley have discovered that there is a curse hanging over the Lennon family. A curse? Yes. Well, throughout history, tragedy has hounded the Lennon family, pursuing them wherever they are, ever since ancient Egypt and the beginnings of the family. It's fascinating. Go on. Why, throughout history, everywhere you go, Lennons have been in tragedy. Nikolai Lennon. The Lennon sisters. When will this stop? And then there was a three-bell alert on UPI or AP, and some major breaking story came over the wire, so the group suddenly broke up. And the last we saw was Mike sort of nursing his chin as he walked back to his dressing room. And we didn't think anything of it. So the new news began, the 15-minute retrospective ended. And, of course, this was the happy talk format where Mike and his co-anchor, Sue Pearson, are supposed to debate the, or discuss what they've just seen. And Mike turned to Sue and said, Sue, I've been talking to historians at the University of California. And he proceeded to go through this whole account of Nikolai Lennon and the Lennon sisters and all of that. On air! The picture of Sue Pearson frozen, staring at Mike Boyd, as if he had suddenly grown a second or third head, is remarkable. Finally, she turned to the camera and said, thanks, Mike. We have to go to a commercial right now! The screen went blank, they ran through 3 minutes of commercials, they ran out of commercials, and they just went to blank air. Finally, when they came back, Mike was gone, Sue was doing the news alone, And off camera, you could hear Mike screaming at the top of his lungs, "But you didn't tell me! But you didn't tell me!" Well, such ignorance in the newsroom usually does not go that far, but how do we combat it? This is a topic worthy of a doctoral dissertation, and it goes to the very heart of the collapse of educational standards in America, a subject for another day. But a good first step would be to abolish all but two or three journalism schools in the country and have newspapers and TV stations and radio stations once again take over the task of teaching the basics of journalism. Though although there are few journalism school graduates that I've met that I respect, most of them have been taught to write very, very well about nothing in particular, and they continue that for the rest of their careers. One of the biggest problems that Stan has had at the National Journalism Center has been, I guess, what he calls the SCS problem, the syndicated columnist syndrome. So many of the young people who go through his doors are enamored of their own opinions and want to be syndicated columnists or go into opinion journalism and not be complete reporters. Obviously, Stan has had his failures in this respect. I perhaps count myself as one of them. But the reasons for this are that, of course, we hold our opinions in high regard, a ludicrous thought for many of our age, and we also don't want to be confined by the boundaries of conventional journalism. But there's a second, more important reason, and that's a psychological reason. It's no fun to be behind enemy lines in journalism, living off the land. The typical newsroom is a hotbed of intolerance, or at best, smug contempt for conservative ideas. Objective journalism constraints are easily violated if you move to the left, but if you have a subtle conservative coloration to your copy, it's immediately noticed as a standoff. A conservative acquaintance of mine used to work at a fairly reputable magazine, was hired at the Washington Post. After an interval of several months there, I managed to run into him at a party, and I was shocked to discover a changed man. He barely acknowledged our shared values. He was harshly critical of people I knew he had once admired. And I thought for a moment of the movie Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Now, I would not be really upset if a young conservative developed a healthy cynicism about the conservative movement upon entering journalism. It's, as Fred Barnes has said, you can't go wrong in journalism being a little bit suspicious of everyone. And after all, your job is to report information accurately. A certain reserve when the ideological anthems of your youth are played is not a bad thing if you're a reporter. But what I saw in my acquaintance was something more. I think he felt his career would be hampered if he didn't make some break with what his colleagues must have thought was a foolish youthful period of his life. He had decided to some extent to join the hive rather than to fight it. I'm convinced that we will not overcome this problem until we follow A.J. Liebling's old adage that freedom of the press belongs to he or she who owns one. That means not just having conservatives in media outlets, it means training conservatives to be active, not absentee owners. I'm not talking about interference with the basic news product. I'm talking about having conservatives, like Rupert Murdoch, run editorials on their TV stations that call for more than support of more school guard crossing money. I'm talking about showing a willingness to have young conservative reporters in the newsrooms to balance the perspective that comes out of that newsroom. Those newsrooms. Balances it as much as they try so extensively to balance on the basis of race or gender or any number of other considerations. In this regard, the Washington Times and the newspaper in my old hometown, the Sacramento Union, which has just been bought by a new conservative owner, are examples. These conservative owners are taking an active role in making sure the reporters find stories the other reporters don't want and hiring reporters from disparate points of view. As my boss, Bob Barty, told me on my very first day at work, ideology helps you find the news, or at least it helps you find the news the other guy is interested in. That's why this country lost something in the tradition of the founding fathers and their system of a partisan press, which was often outrageous, often sensationalistic, but it certainly was diverse and it certainly was spirited. It was lost. Yes, there was sensationalism and distortion then, but is there any less now? There certainly is less diversity. Certainly, papers such as the Washington Times and the Sacramento Union make mistakes, sometimes a lot of them. But I would rather have a family-owned or independent newspaper with a few rough edges and another Gannett-tized advertising vehicle with a five-color weather map. You may think that I've painted a gloomy picture. I have not. I've painted a hopeful one. Now, communism has failed. The great socialist economist Robert Heilbronner has just admitted in the New Yorker that Ludwig von Mises was right after all. And even Sam Donaldson said the other day that the most interesting writing in America was being written by conservatives. And next time you feel glum about the state of the U.S. media, here's an anecdote from my last trip to East Berlin. I'm sorry, Berlin. I visited the offices of an East German newspaper that had just been bought by the Springer Group, a very conservative newspaper that the Joachim Mankristen is familiar with. The editor, or the publisher, met me at the door and said, "Well, you think you have problems in America. I have 400 former communist journalists working for me." And that's the easy part. They know communism has failed. My editors are from West Germany, the 60s generation, and they still believe in all these left-wing possibilities. And he told me, "Well, I walked through the newsroom yesterday, and I knew I had trouble. There was a conversation taking place between one of my West German editors and one of the former communist East German reporters. And the reporter had written a story on kindergarten enrollments, and the West German editor was berating him for not emphasizing the class warfare elements present in the story." So, we have a long ways to go in the United States, but we've come a long way in the last decade since Stan began the National Journalism Center. And I suspect when we have a similar Philadelphia Society meeting on the same topic a year from now, there will be even greater hope.